You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello all, Eric Rivenis with the Most Notorious Podcast here. Each week I interview an author or historian about a historical true crime, tragedy, or disaster. Subject matter ranges from gunslingers to Gilded Age murder to gangsters to fires to pirates to wild prison breaks. My guests bring their incredible knowledge directly to you. Please subscribe to Most Notorious on your favorite podcast app. Cheers, and have a safe tomorrow.
On April 14, 1865, President Abraham Lincoln and his wife, Mary Todd, decided to take a carriage ride. The last few years had been hard on them, to say the least. Not only had Lincoln been consumed by the Civil War, which was finally dragging to an end after four bloody years of fighting and the deaths of some 600,000 American soldiers, but the Lincolns were still reeling from a personal tragedy as well. In the thick of the war, back in February 1862, they had lost their 11-year-old son, Willie, to a bout of what was probably typhoid fever. During the carriage ride, Mary remarked on her husband's great cheerfulness. The president replied, quote, "And well may I feel so, Mary. I consider this day the war has come to a close. We must both be more cheerful in the future. Between the war and the loss of our darling Willie, we have both been very miserable," unquote. With the war finally ending, it seemed that they would be able to turn over a new leaf, starting that night with a trip to Ford's Theater to see the play Our American Cousin. Of course, things didn't go as planned. That evening, while watching the play alongside his wife, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. But that's not the only thing that happened on that bloody spring night in the nation's capital. The Lincoln assassination was about much more than one man. In fact, it was designed as a three-pronged attack meant to take down the entire Union government. At around the same time that John Wilkes Booth snuck into Ford's Theater armed with a pistol, two of his co-conspirators were on murderous missions of their own. Near Lafayette Square, Confederate soldier Lewis Powell knocked on the door of Secretary of State William H. Seward, armed with a knife. Nearby, German immigrant George Atzerodt sat at the Kirkwood Hotel with his knife and gun, trying to summon the courage to attack the Vice President, Andrew Johnson, who was alone upstairs in his room. The violence that gripped Washington, D.C. that night would extend far beyond Ford's Theater, and would reverberate far beyond April 1865. This is the true story of the Lincoln assassination conspiracy, from its often forgotten victims to its impact on American history for decades to come. You're listening to History Uncovered, brought to you by the digital publisher All That's Interesting, where we explore the uncharted corners of the natural world and the world past. I'm All That's Interesting staff writer Kalina Fraga.
And I'm All That's Interesting staff writer Austin Harvey.
Today, we're digging into the Lincoln assassination and the larger conspiracy surrounding it. It's a week two of a presidential
assassination content.
Yeah. Well, everything about the Lincoln assassination obviously starts with the assassin. So that's John Wilkes Booth. He's an actor. He's from an acting family. He has these dreams of, you know, fame and everything. And he really hates Lincoln. He's a Confederate supporter during the war. And he just has deep hatred for Lincoln. But his first plan, as the war is kind of drawing to a close in 1864 and 1865, is to kidnap Lincoln, not kill him. So in pursuit of that, he kind of brings together these conspirators that include George Atzerodt, David Harold, and Lewis Powell, names that will come up later.
What was their plan then? They were just going to kidnap him and then
bring him to the Confederacy and use him as ransom, basically. But it didn't work.
Yeah, right.
The plan was supposed to take place in March 1864. They thought he was going to be somewhere and he didn't show up. So after that, the plan was abandoned.
Yeah, they really, they gave up quick. They were like, oh, crap, he didn't show up. Well, I guess we're done with that plan.
They were done with that plan. And then things started happening really quickly. So this was March 20th. That was their original date of the kidnapping plan, March 20th, 1865. Just a little while later on April 2nd, Richmond, Virginia, the capital of the Confederacy, is captured by the Union. And the Confederate leaders flee. About a week after that, Robert E. Lee surrenders to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox, Virginia. And this is marking the Civil War is basically ending in these big steps.
Right.
But what really kind of convinces Booth that Lincoln has to die is Booth goes to listen to his final speech, in which Lincoln kind of like suggests that he would support a limited version of black suffrage. And Booth says, this means, he says, N-word citizenship. Now, by God, I'll put him through. This is the last speech he will ever make.
Wow.
But Booth doesn't really have a plan until April 14th. And then he goes to Ford's Theater to pick up his mail because he's an actor and he like travels. His mail is being sent to Ford's Theater and he knew the owner. And the owner was like, Lincoln's going to be here tonight. And then Booth started thinking, oh, I'm going to like, this is the perfect opportunity to kill him. Yeah. Lincoln, it was also like advertised all around the city. And they also said that Ulysses S. Grant would also be there. So this could, it seemed like a just a great opportunity to take them both out.
Right. Imagine that's, I mean, you know, Booth's got to be a racist because he was a Confederate supporter. Uh-huh. But like, wow, I've never heard that quote before. Mm. That
that's
right. That's bad.
Booth's not a good guy.
No.
Though he thinks he is. He thinks he's the hero in this story.
That's crazy. I mean, I know that's the way that is, but that's...
I know. Isn't that horrible?
Yeah.
So Booth goes back to this gang of conspirators that were going to help him kidnap the president. And he says, instead of doing that, let's do this other thing. He says, I'll kill Lincoln. Lewis Powell is sent to kill William H. Seward, who's the Secretary of State and a close friend of Lincoln's. And George Atzerodt is going to kill Andrew Johnson, the vice president.
Wow. Yeah, take them all out. The whole line of succession there.
That's the plan, is like just to make the Union government collapse, right? And they think, you know, if it collapses, the Civil War is almost over at this point, but maybe that would change, you know?
Yeah, without their general, without the morale hit that they would take.
Yeah, for sure. So the first guy we'll talk about is this guy Atzerodt, who's a German immigrant. And he, for the kidnapping conspiracy, was recruited because he knows, he knew all about like the waterways around Washington, D.C.
Mm.
So during the war, he like ferried spies and stuff. But now he's been assigned to kill Andrew Johnson, who just became vice president like a month ago in March.
Wow.
When he's inaugurated, he infamously gives this really drunken speech and he's like ranting about his plebeian roots and how he like overcame all these elites and everything. It's very similar language that we hear like now.
I
in
was
some
gonna
ways.
Say that's a little uncanny.
Yeah, he's super drunk. People are like pulling on his coattail to try to get him off the stage. He's just there. But Lincoln purportedly said afterward, it has been a severe lesson for Andy, but I do not think he will do it again. So Lincoln's very forgiving about this, though of course he didn't know he was gonna die in like a month and that Johnson would become the president.
Yeah. Was Andrew Johnson famously not a good president? It sounds like it.
He's famously considered like the one of the worst presidents in American history. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, he's the first president to be impeached. He was a racist. It's like a what if of history, and we can talk about it a bit more later. But it's like if Lincoln had lived, what would the post Civil War years look like? You know?
Yeah. Was Johnson a Democrat? He ran with Lincoln on the National Union Party ticket. Hmm.
But he's a good addition to the ticket because he's from the South. So it seems like that could be a good balancing act after the war. In any case, Johnson is staying at the Kirkwood Hotel near Ford's Theater. And Atzerodt goes with a gun and a knife and he books a room at the Kirkwood. But then he goes to the bar around 10. And though he asks about Johnson, he just sits there and drinks. It's like looking for liquid courage.
Yeah. Fair. I mean, fair enough.
Yeah. But he just keeps drinking. He just doesn't stop. He never gets that liquid courage you need to kill someone.
Right. Yeah. Usually it's like a quick shot and then you're like, okay, now let's go.
Right. Game time.
But yeah, by the end of your like third old fashioned, when you're like, I still can't do it. It's like, I just don't think you have it in you then.
He doesn't. He spends the night wandering on Washington, D.C. and checks into a different hotel at 10 a.m. just like... just does not do what he's supposed to do. And Johnson, meanwhile, is unguarded, you know, in his room by himself, so.
Probably also drunk. Wow. He had the easiest job of all these guys.
Yeah, and it didn't happen. Meanwhile, close by, this guy, Lewis Powell, goes to attack William H. Seward, the Secretary of State. I think one of the first books I read about the Lincoln presidency was Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin, and it's really good. She kind of lays out, you know, all of Lincoln's relationships with the people who became members of his cabinet, including Seward. So Seward was kind of his foe at first, and then they became really close friends. But Seward had been like a terrible carriage accident, and he broke his jaw. So he was bedridden and had this like metal contraption holding his jaw together.
Oh, yeah.
He couldn't even speak. And like when Lincoln had visited him to talk about visiting Richmond, which had just fallen, Seward couldn't speak at all.
Wow.
So he's in kind of bad shape. And, you know, seems like it would be a pretty easy target.
Yeah, right. Bedridden, basically incapacitated.
Can't even talk. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So around the same time that Astaroth is drinking at the bar, Powell goes to the door and knocks a little after 10 p.m. When a servant answers, he says that he has medicine for Seward, which seems a bit unbelievable because it's 10 p.m. and just they don't know who this guy is.
Right.
So then Powell forces his way inside and he is like determined to get this job done. As he's running up the stairs to where Seward is in bed, Seward's sons run out to see what's going on. Powell fires at one of them and misses and then clobbers him with his pistol. He then stabs the other son, then attacks Seward's bodyguard, his daughter, and his nurse, and then jumps into the secretary's bed and starts to stab him in the face and throat.
Oh.
Yeah. Seward's totally defenseless. He was just in this accident. But his jaw's held by this metal contraption, and the knife is like hitting the contraption. So it's not, it hits Seward. He's like stabbed, but it's also bouncing off the contraption. And that probably saves his life. Powell's eventually pulled off the bed. And then as he's like slicing at them, he's yelling, "I'm mad, I'm mad." And then he runs out. And just for good measure, this poor State Department messenger shows up and Powell stabs him and then runs out into the night.
Oh, my God. It's like not funny, but it's just so like...
What a sequence of events.
Yeah, for real. Was he yelling, "I'm mad, I'm mad," to what? Make himself seem insane so they wouldn't pursue him, maybe?
Maybe. Or was he just like actually... something?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Or maybe he's just actually like angry because he screwed the whole thing up.
Maybe. He runs out into the night and he's supposed to meet up with David Harold, who's another of the conspirators, but Harold got scared off by all the screams he heard within the house and he booked it. So then Powell gets lost and he probably spent the night sleeping in a cemetery. So that's how he spent that night.
Wow.
And Seward survives. He lives for 7 more years and famously buys Alaska, which is why it's called Seward's Folly.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. So did anyone in that house die?
No.
Wow.
Incredibly. Yeah.
That's amazing. They're all just kind of like stabbed.
Stabbed, beaten. Yeah. But somehow, yeah, everyone lives. At the same time, this is happening. Booth is making his way to Ford's Theater. So he goes up to the presidential box where Lincoln, his wife, Mary, and this young couple named Clara Harris and Henry Rathbone are sitting. It's around 10:15 p.m. One really interesting thing is that it had been advertised that Grant would be there, but Grant's wife, Julia, hated Mary Lincoln. So when Grant was like, "Hey, do you want to go to the play with the Lincolns?" She was like, "No, I hate Mary. I don't want to go."
That's
so Grant
so
made
funny.
An excuse. Yeah.
Wow.
Mary Lincoln was kind of a difficult person to get along with.
I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So instead, they have to, you know, they have this box. So they invite this couple instead, worst night of their lives. It's really sad because the Lincolns, like, they seemed like they were really happy in their final moments together. At one point, Lincoln takes Mary's hand and Mary says to him, "What will Miss Harris think of my hanging on to you so?" And Lincoln's, apparently his last words are, "She won't think anything of it." Then the play starts. Yeah. Booth knows the show. And so apparently he waits for a laugh line. And when the crowd starts laughing, that's when he shoots Lincoln. Mary starts to scream. Rathbone's a Union officer. He leaps up and tries to grapple with Booth, and Booth stabs him, then jumps from the box down into the crowd below, and he yells, "Sic semper tyrannis," which means "thus always to tyrants." Dramatic.
I get why he waited for the laugh moment and the noise to cover up the sound of the bullet. I don't know if it was necessary.
Yeah, it doesn't really...
One, it's still a bullet. It's still going to make a loud sound. And also just the commotion.
I think he wanted Lincoln to be like distracted, you know, perhaps. I mean, who knows
Maybe.
What he was thinking. So Booth breaks his leg in the fall, but still manages to escape from the theater. And Lincoln is taken across the street where he is pronounced dead at around 7 a.m. the next morning. It's at this point that Edwin Stanton, who's the war secretary, says now he belongs to the Ages, which has also been, or the Angels maybe, but the Ages.
Huh.
Yeah. Seward, meanwhile, you know, is in pretty bad shape, but not dead. And so some sources say that maybe this news was kept from him. But Doris Kearns Goodwin, at least, says that he notices the flags being at half masts. And he knows that if Lincoln were alive, he would have come to see him. Mm. So he kind of puts two and two together and knows that Lincoln's dead.
Wow, yeah.
But really, this story like continues past the assassination. The first thing they want to do is capture all these guys, you know.
Right.
And it becomes kind of clear, you know, it wasn't just Lincoln who was attacked. It was also Johnson and Seward. So they know that it was a bigger thing. George Atzerodt is arrested 5 days later in Maryland. He made a lot of mistakes. You know, he asked about Johnson. He booked into a room under his own name, which the police searched and found a loaded revolver, a knife, and a bank book belonging to Booth. So that was a pretty easy.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like that's like the one thing you shouldn't do if you're planning a crime.
Yeah.
Use your
real name.
I don't
think he was meant to be a criminal.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Well, he ended up not doing anything, so.
Right, exactly. So he's arrested and convicted for conspiracy to commit murder. Lewis Powell is arrested a couple days later when he turns up at this boarding house owned by Mary Surratt, which the conspirators had kind of used to discuss the plot. She later becomes the first woman to ever be executed in American history.
Yeah, I wrote something about her for the site.
Oh, yeah? About her, or about her as like part of a larger...
It was just about her and her involvement in this conspiracy and whether... there were a lot of people very outraged about her being hanged with everybody.
Yeah, it was sort of like unclear. Historians still debate, her innocence or not.
Right.
But she was executed, as was Powell. He shows up with blood on his sleeves. He's carrying a pickaxe. Again, two and two together. They figure he's involved. John Wilkes Booth, meanwhile, is on the lam for 12 days. And actually, there's a TV show coming out soon called Manhunt, which is based on a book, which is fantastic. The book.
Interesting.
About trying to track him down. And it's interesting because from what I remember in the book, Booth is reading newspapers from the North and the South. And he's expecting at least the Southern ones to, you know, see him as a hero. But they don't. Like, they think it's going to make things worse for them. He's just like, he's crushed by his coverage after the assassination. But anyway, after 12 days, he's cornered by Union soldiers in Port Royal, Virginia, and is shot and killed there. It takes him a long time to die.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say 12. I mean, just 12 days on the run with a broken leg, even.
Right.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, it's not like people didn't know who he was.
He's a famous actor.
Yeah,
I mean, it certainly seems like he got some help escaping and being on the lam for that long. But so he's killed there, and then his accomplice David Harold is also hanged with the other conspirators. One of the kind of the most overlooked parts of the assassination, I think, are these people who are in the box with Lincoln and Mary Lincoln. They're super traumatized, especially Rathbone, because he felt like he should have done more to save the president.
Yeah, because he was a soldier of some sort. Yeah, I mean, I'd imagine you'd be pretty torn up if you failed to stop the president from being assassinated.
Right. So unsurprisingly, then his mental health kind of just like plummets. He and Clara eventually move to Germany, and then he just loses his mind. Basically, one night in 1883, Christmas Eve, actually.
Oof.
He attacks his wife with a pistol and a dagger. He shoots her, stabs her in the chest, and then stabs himself 5 times in the chest.
Whoa.
He survives, she doesn't, and he spends the rest of his life in an insane asylum.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough.
I know, but like that, it's the kind of thing I think would be very hard to ever get over, that kind of guilt and trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just like major PTSD.
Yeah. Meanwhile, for the country, this is a pretty, some historians think this is like the biggest thing to ever happen in American history, the Civil War and the Lincoln assassination.
I think, that's pretty fair.
Because afterwards, Andrew Johnson becomes president. And so the question is, how would Lincoln have dealt with Reconstruction? Johnson is not open to black suffrage like Lincoln was. he was pretty racist. He said things like, this is a country for white men, and by God, as long as I am president, it shall be a government for white men. So, yeah. Confederate leaders were pardoned instead of being put on trial.
Because he was sympathetic to their cause.
Mm-hmm. He was a Southerner, you know, and...
Well, yeah, yeah.
Although he, you know, talked about his plebeian roots, he really wanted to be approved of by the, like, the ruling class. So he was happy to be kind of like one of the boys. And meanwhile, you know, he'd inherited Lincoln's cabinet and Congress and everything and ends up having a very combative relationship with them, which leads to his impeachment, which, like Clinton and Trump, he's not convicted, though he is impeached.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really astute observation about this possibly being the... I never really thought about it much, like other than right now, what happened after Lincoln's assassination. I always just kind of stopped the story there. I was like, oh, and then they killed him. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then life went on. But yeah, I forgot, like, forget how major that post-Civil War period really was.
Super major, yeah.
Like, other presidents who had been assassinated, like McKinley and JFK, which were both, like, massive deals, obviously, the president being assassinated. But they didn't also have to restructure and rebuild the country.
Right, yeah. I mean, you could argue, like, Theodore Roosevelt and LBJ changed American history.
Yeah.
When they became president. But yeah, this was like a very delicate moment in American history. And I mean, and it's possible that Lincoln would have not risen to the occasion.
True.
But he died. So it's impossible to know. And Johnson, meanwhile, is, yeah, considered one of the worst, if not the worst, president in American history for how he dealt with it. Yeah. Johnson was a Johnson saw himself as like the ultimate patriot, you know, and he was buried wrapped in an American flag and with the Constitution under his head, like really, but...
oh my God.
But he was, just pretty consistently voted by historians as being one of the worst ones.
Yeah. He didn't get reelected, did he?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No.
Just pulling up a list of worst presidents in U.S. history. Just out of curiosity.
A lot of them are around the Civil War years, interestingly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm curious if part of that is just because it's easy to be like, oh, well, obviously this very racist president was one of the worst.
Yeah, well, it's like, how did people try to prevent the war? Most of them didn't really try that hard. And then, yeah, Johnson could have done things like really differently.
Yeah, okay, usnews.com. Number two, Andrew Johnson. And number one, James Buchanan.
He was the guy before Lincoln.
Mm. Well, yeah. That'll do it then, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but Johnson was, yeah, not a good president.
Matt, yeah, that's crazy. Bookending Lincoln between two very bad presidents.
I know. I mean, Lincoln is a really fascinating like character and just seems like a really good person, you know, when you read about him and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anything. I've heard bad things about his wife, but I don't think I've ever read or heard anything bad about Lincoln.
I'll say two things. One is like a lot of people did not like Mary Lincoln. So when Lincoln died, like, and the people who were writing about Lincoln's life were people who loved Lincoln and hated Mary Lincoln. So they're all like pretty biased, I think.
That's fair.
But she did seem like a difficult person to get along with. The Lincoln also did some questionable stuff. Like at one point he thought a solution to slavery would be to send all Black Americans to like Africa, send them back.
Oh.
He was like, this plan could work. Which was insane because at that point, like some people had lived in the United States for like longer than
right.
You know, since the beginning.
Right.
No one's perfect. And that was
well, he never followed through with it.
No.
It was just in the workshopping stages.
I think he might have talked about it with like Frederick Douglass, like brought up the idea or something, but
yeah.
I am aware, Mr. Trenchard, you are not used to the manners of good society, and that alone will excuse the impertinence of which you have been guilty.
Don't know the manners of good society, eh? Well, I guess I know enough to turn you inside out, old gal. You sockdologizing old man trap.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
I mean, I think what's interesting about the Lincoln assassination is just that, well, kind of like what you said in kind of the American consciousness, it's like, oh, this happened and he was killed. But there was so much else going on,
right,
even that very night. And then afterwards, obviously, as well.
Yeah. And the way that that plot evolved to the fact that they were like, oh, let's kidnap him. And then one thing went wrong and they were like, scrap that plan. Let's kill him.
Right. Yeah. And I think that attack on Seward was so vicious. And also, just what are the chances that he would have been in this carriage accident and that's, you know,
right,
saved his life?
Do you know if he ever recovered from that fully? If he, like, I mean, presumably was able to talk again because you quoted him.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, he did die 7 years later, but I think he was already
He was probably getting up there at that point. They didn't really live that long anyway back then.
Yeah, a pretty vicious attack.
So you said they called the attack, or the, not the attack, the attack on Alaska, the purchase of Alaska. They called that Seward's folly.
They did, yeah.
Because there was like a bad idea to buy it.
Well, they were like, it's not even connected to the United States.
That's fair.
But then I think they found gold or oil there, and then it was like, oh, okay, it's good.
Right.
Good job, Seward.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, yeah, it is an interesting bit of land.
Yeah. Well, I guess Seward saw something there and decided to go for it. But yeah, Seward's folly.
Whatever happened to Mary Todd Lincoln after all this?
Well, she was around for a while. They still had two living sons, one of whom died pretty young. So they had four sons and three of them died pretty young.
Wow.
And the final son, Robert Todd Lincoln, you know, had a normal life in some ways and abnormal in other ways. And I think he eventually put her in an insane asylum, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, that was just what you did with your women back then.
Yeah, she was a lot. She was a lot to handle. And I'm pretty sure that's what he did with her.
Wow. That's harsh.
He was also present at some other assassination. Oh, I think he was present with James Garfield's assassination, maybe. Yeah, he was about 40 feet away when James Garfield was shot in 1881.
Wow.
I know.
Really relive your trauma there. Jeez.
Seriously. Wait, and then I just want to see if he was also there around with McKinley.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, he was just outside the Temple of Music where McKinley was shot.
Wow.
That's wild.
Yeah, these Lincolns are like assassin magnets.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
You're President McKinley about to go give a speech. They're like, oh, sir, we just want to let you know, President Lincoln's son is actually going to be in attendance tonight. It's like, call it off. Like, cancel the speech. This is not going to go well.
Apparently. This is on Wikipedia, so we would have to double check this. But Robert Todd Lincoln was apparently invited to some president invited him somewhere. And he said, no, I'm not going. And they better not ask me because there's a certain fatality about presidential functions when I am present.
Wow. I hope that's true. I hope that's true that he said that because that's so funny.
And I think we talked about this at some point, but like Robert Todd Lincoln was saved by Booth's brother, Edwin.
Did we talk about
that at one point? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember. Maybe during the Lincoln and Washington podcast that we did.
Yeah. He'd like fallen onto the train tracks and Edwin leapt down and pulled him up. And Edwin was a famous actor too. Robert Todd recognized him.
Wow. Huh. Way to redeem your legacy, I guess.
It was before the assassination, but preemptive redemption.
Dang. Way to have a... You say brother, his brother?
His older brother, yeah.
His older brother, yeah. Imagine being like, wow, I saved the president's son. People are going to remember the Booths as heroes. And his brother's like, yes, they are, for a different reason.
Edwin's story is kind of interesting because he was more famous than John Wilkes Booth and like probably the better actor and everything. But then after the assassination, some newspapers were like, we can never let a Booth act ever again on an American stage,
oh,
you know?
No.
Like, It just ruined his life.
He's like, I didn't do it.
And he did actually return to acting, but he took a long break from
it. Good for him.
There's a funny, an interesting tradition people have of leaving pennies on John Wilkes Booth's grave because it has Lincoln's face. Yeah.
I think
not funny to Booth, probably.
I think we can laugh at the racist assassin.
Yeah, that's fair.
His posthumous misfortune.
Yeah. I'm going to check out that show, Manhunt. Although I was talking to someone, Patton Oswalt is in it. And apparently, there was some review where they were like, he's been so miscast in this show. But I thought the book was really interesting.
Yeah, he's playing Lafayette Baker, who I am not familiar with.
Is
Lafayette
that a real
C. Baker, an investigator person? And spy. Yeah.
With the Pinkertons again, or just a random investigator?
No, he's a Union soldier who was a spy in the South.
I see.
Interesting. Intel.gov refers to him as the scoundrel spy chief.
Hmm.
Military Images Digital said he had a controversial life. He was one of the guys who investigated the assassination, who like tried to track down John Wilkes Booth and David Harold.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Patton Oswalt's a weird choice for that, for sure.
Not really a dramatic actor, but maybe he's like a scoundrel investigator. They were like, yeah, he's like
sometimes comedic actors are better dramatic actors than you'd expect. You know what? Now that we're talking about it, I think I do remember seeing like brief previews for this show, but I had no idea what it was about.
Yeah.
Other than it was called Manhunt. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think the book I thought was really fantastic. And it's an interesting story. It's like, how did he escape for 12 days?
Yeah, and what was he doing?
And why did they kill him? I mean, I think that's like another interesting part of the assassination as well.
Yeah. Now, are there conspiracy theories about that? Because that'd
hell
be interesting.
Yeah.
Conspiracy on conspiracy.
Well, there's like two. I think people are like, why was he killed and not put on trial? Mm-hmm. And then there's a theory that he was not killed at all, that he actually became like either a sideshow performer or like that his body was later in sideshows.
Mm.
There was a body that was displayed in these shows that I think they said was Booth.
Interesting.
Yeah. But they weren't supposed to kill him. You know, they.
Right. Yeah.
And the guy who did it was a really strange character. Boston Corbett, I think. I think he thought that like God was talking to him or something. There's something strange about his story, but he took the shot. It wasn't a good shot because it took Booth like hours to die, but.
Right.
You can always check out more stories on the site, allthatsinteresting.com. And of course, you can join our newsletter for more content like that by going to allthatsinteresting.com/signup or becoming a member at allthatsinteresting.com/membership.
Yes. You can also write into this podcast at podcast@allthatsinteresting.com if you want to share in written form any of your thoughts, opinions, facts you know, things we got wrong, conspiracy theories about John Wilkes Booth. All of that can be sent in there, or you can leave us a voicemail at
929-526-3029.
And follow us on social media. We are on Instagram at History Uncovered Podcast, on TikTok at Real History Uncovered. And if you're listening to this podcast on YouTube, you've already found us, but we're also on YouTube.
We're everywhere. Till next time.
Well, if I have to say so, this podcast has been one for the ages.
Oh. Or the angels.
Or the angels. We don't know.
All right. Let's leave it there then.
What's something you learned in history class that you feel like wasn't the whole truth? Better yet, what's something you didn't learn at all that was omitted completely? That's what I like to call redacted history. My name is Andre White, the host of the Redacted History Podcast, the place where history's forgotten events, heroes, and villains get their story told, one episode at a time. The Redacted History Podcast. Real history never dies. Stream the Redacted History Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.